Hey, what's going on, everyone? Matt Harmon here. Just wanted to give you a quick note before we go into the show that James and I recorded this probably classic, of course, about an hour and a half-ish before we got news that Ricky Pearsall, according to Nick Wagner of ESPN, is dealing with knee swelling related to the PCL injury he suffered last year. Team says, quote, all options are being explored and there is some, quote, concern. Again, that's Nick's report here. So, yeah, we discuss Dazon's dribbling in this episode relating to the Christian Kirk injury that happened earlier in camp. So, you know, things are happening. Things are moving quickly. I guess everything that we say about dribbling later in this episode, you can go ahead and 2X that. You know, same goes for me, double type situation if Ricky Pearsall is going to miss significant time. Obviously, it's a bummer. Love Pearsall as a player. We talked about him not too long ago on the show. His reception perception profile still really encouraging in year two, despite all the injuries he dealt with last year. And it seems like he can't quite shake this PCL injury right now. So we're going to continue to monitor and discuss that situation. But for now, just keep in mind when we talk about dribbling in this episode, we don't have that piece of information yet. But like I said, I guess just go ahead and double down even more on dribbling potential optimism and path to playing time here with Pearsall potentially set to miss some time and the concern that the team has about that. But with that, let's get into the rest of the show with me and James right now.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are gonna move. We are gonna answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready.
Ready.
Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short
the
routes.
Boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
Reception the show. Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Coe, Matt Harmon here with you. You're listening to Reception Perception the show. All right, Matt, great show lined up in front of us here today. Oh my goodness gracious, man, so much receiver news is coming out of training camp here. Can't wait to tackle this with you. And obviously, we will be talking about some of these great profiles that are coming out on the site as well, highlighting Drake London's performance in 2025 and what that might mean for Atlanta in 2026. But I want to start here with Josh Downs. He's your boy. You love Josh Downs. Look, Alec Pierce is dealing with an ankle injury. Michael Pittman was traded away, and now Josh Downs, right now in training camp, is kind of sort of like the last guy standing here. But of note, from beat reporter Jake Arthur, he's playing a lot outside. He wrote in a recent column, Downs previously saw a lot of work as a slot receiver in three receiver sets, but now he's going to play much more on the outside, even in two receiver sets. It's not uncharted territory, but it hasn't been very common. And as he points out, over the past three seasons, Josh Downs has played about 77% of his snaps lined up as a slot receiver. What do you do with this information, Matt Harmon?
Man, we get excited about it, okay? We're going to let ourselves get excited about this Josh Downs thing right now because it's not just beat reporter speculation either. Shane Steichen, I had a little chat about this as well. I saw Coach Speak Index tweet this out. I retweeted it. Steichen said, quote, getting him involved in any way we can, whether it's 12 personnel. Obviously, he plays a lot in the slot and 11 personnel, but just trying to find different ways to get him the ball. Yeah, I mean, I think that this has been my thing with Downs heading into this year. He's just so much better set up than last season to make a big, big, big impact because Michael Pittman is gone. And yes, like he has not played a lot in two receiver sets over the course of his career. The reality is, one, you can make it happen. Even if a guy is like a slot only player or like a slot profile type player, you can get ways where, you know, I think we kind of talked about this at the end of the last show where you can have the two tight ends to one side, you know, Downs and Pierce aligned as the two receivers on the other side, and it's still a two receiver set, but you get Downs a slot rep. I also personally think like he can play outside. It's not completely similar, but it is after the Jackson Smith and Jigba eruption last year, based on, you know, being a guy that was a slot only player, but he was so good against man coverage that I thought, okay, it's definitely, I wasn't concerned about JSN's ability to play outside. I do think Downs is someone that can absolutely do that too. I mean, he's three straight years in the NFL, 77.5%, 76.7%, and 75.3% success rate versus man coverage last year. Wow. Career best, 82.4% success rate versus press. Now, it was just on 8% of his routes, not a massive sample size, but I think there's enough indicators here that he can play on the perimeter if given a chance, even if just at the Z receiver spot. We know that we've talked about the quads previously. Quads are looking bigger Josh Downs. Yeah. I think he's got the added size here. And I just like last thing and easiest thing to say about this is that if you just look over at the Colts depth chart right now, Shane Steichen, you would have to believe that Shane Steichen is an idiot to not play Josh Downs like all the time relative to the other players on the depth chart. Like Shane Steichen is not going to play Ashton Doolin or Nick Westbrook-Ikhine over Josh Downs in 12 personnel. Or if that's the case, they're just not going to play a lot of 12 personnel. Like they're not going to run out there with five eligible pass catchers based on who's on the roster right now. And Josh Downs is not going to be one of them. Like again, Steichen would have to be an idiot to do that. I do not believe that Shane Steichen is an idiot. I believe he is one of the best play callers in the NFL. So, I think we're going to see a lot of Josh Downs on just on the field a lot more this year and on the outside as well.
I also believe in Shane Steichen, Matt Harmon, but
don't you butt me.
Listen, dude. Hey, listen. When I see Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, I'm just saying, I'm not saying Nick West, NWI is not the best player, but somehow, some way, NWI finds his way on the football field, man.
Not this year.
And I'm with, hey, brother, I am with you, man. Like, of course, of course. I think that Josh Downs, Alec Pierce should be playing, you know, 90% of the snaps each, right? But golly, man, I mean, I don't know. Like, I've been in this game too long. You've been in this game too long to know. That rarely happens, you know? The things that we want rarely happen, and it's guys like Nick Westbrook-Ikhine that somehow emerge. I don't think it will be Ashton Doolin. I'm with you. But I don't know, man. I see a veteran like NWI, and for some reason, my heart skips a beat, man. I'm like, oh, boy, this might be the guy. I'm hoping it's not, but it might be.
I actually think Doolin's got a better shot to play over, like, if it's going to be one of those guys, I think it actually will be Doolin over Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. They barely gave Westbrook-Ikhine any money. Yeah, Doolin's been around there for a minute. Pretty athletic player, and they've kind of talked him up at times. Remember, he even got some defensive snaps last year. He is the new Travis Hunter is Ashton Doolin. Good. That's what the people are saying. But before we move on from the Downs thing, I want to give a quick shout out to Jamie from Just Ballin, B-A-L-L-N, Just Ballin with J. He's a cartoon artist, NFL cartoon artist, who I've met at the Fantasy Football Expo each of the last 2 years. Surprised me this year with an awesome custom designed Josh Downs T-shirt and a thing.
That
I'm gonna, a little picture. I'm gonna have it in the background here in the shot pretty soon. So yeah, Jamie is a hell of a guy. He's not on Twitter, actually. Not on Twitter. He's on Instagram though. So people can check him out on Instagram and they can check out his website as well. Just Ballin, B-A-L-L-N with J.com. Really awesome guy. I've really enjoyed getting to know him each of the last 2 years. And the Josh Downs thing was pretty sick. So yeah, it's Josh Downs season. And you know what, Jamie? You're right, bro. It is Josh Downs season. I'm excited about Josh Downs. I think he's going to play a little more outside, and I think this is the year that he'll get a. By the way, I like that Downs is not focused on his contract right now. He's in a contract year. He says he's waiting until the end of the season to think about that. I think he should, because I think today's price is not going to be tomorrow's price on Josh Downs. Yeah, exactly. You know, like, I think he's going to make a lot of money for himself this year.
Yeah, I think that's the smart call for Josh Downs. By the way, Josh Downs' profile available at receptionperception.com. Go check it out right now. You'll be impressed because, again, he's not gone full green route tree, but pretty dang close, man.
Getting close.
Pretty dang close, you know? Again, I'll just give you some highlights here, but the in-breakers, pretty much unstoppable, you know? 80% post, 78% on the dig, 86% on the curl, 84% success rate on the slant. So, again, in-breakers, good luck stopping the guy. So, we'll see, man. But again, to Matt's point, though, was very successful against man, was very successful against press. But again, I will leave it up to you guys to go find the profile on the site and read it in full there. Christian Kirk, calf strain in San Francisco. The substation strikes again, baby. Christian Kirk with an early training camp calf strain. Who will benefit more with the reps and the practice time? Are we looking at Ricky Pearsall? We're looking at DeJohn Stripling. Who benefits more from this potential injury to Christian Kirk, who, by the way, is an older player as well?
Yeah, I've actually been kind of surprised as I've heard people elsewhere talk about like Stripling's opportunity this year and talk about how, well, Kirk is kind of the locked in three. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if Kirk is, and now, of course, he's injured, so it's, you know, easy to say this now, but I thought that was a shot. He might not even be on the team like to start this year. They barely paid him any money. I think like obviously they want some depth there, so maybe having a veteran around would be good. But I think Stripling already had a good shot to enter the year as the number three receiver, and now I think it's going to be like pretty much a lock that he's the number three receiver bare minimum, I think, here. And obviously Pearsall, really good player I'm very fond of. Still kind of wasn't healthy throughout the course of the offseason with that PCL injury. Like, I hope that doesn't become a thing for Ricky Pearsall. But, you know, look, if Pearsall is himself, I think he's the number two receiver here across from Mike Evans. But I think Stripling is going to make this thing interesting. And, you know, it's so funny. Like, why it drives me a little crazy that like everything every aggregator is like all over DeJohn Stripling. Yeah. It's so weird. Like you can tell.
Like what is it about Stripling?
Do we really want to pull the curtain back on like the aggregation nonsense? It's all these social media managers are just trying to hit their quota of engagement because they see like Stripling content is engaging. But it's so weird, right? Like he's just kind of I don't want to call him a random player, but it's like he got a lot of attention because he was a quote reach in the draft. Yeah. And it feels like everybody's chasing that, like the Stripling high from after the draft. I think I joked about this, that Stripling is our most viewed YouTube video on the channel. Like,
right.
So, you know, he's a content print fest, baby, is DeJohn Stripling. But now I think he's going to be like he's got a chance to be a real player for this 49ers offense, just to sort of refresh people's memory on Stripling. And we talked about the reason that YouTube video did well is because I talked about him as like one of my favorite day two sleepers, and then he went at the very top of day two, so even more than I expected him to go on day two of the NFL draft. I had him ranked as a day two prospect. He ends up going at the very first pick on day two, which definitely was surprising. But if you think about why he fits the he fits the Niners offense, and he fits like kind of as a coach's favorite in general, which is why I think he's had a pretty good summer. It sounds like he's a really smart player, gives a lot of effort. He's an awesome blocker, which is why I think they've sort of not just ticketed him for Juwan Jennings' old role. They literally gave him Juwan Jennings' old jersey number, but he's
rocking the 15.
He's rocking the 15, man. He's 6'2", 207 pounds, 10 inch hands, 91st percentile 40-yard dash, 82nd percentile broad jump, good frame, carries the weight well and everything. Like, yeah, and he plays to that size and physicality, I believe. He's not the most nuanced route runner in the world, but 68.4% success rate versus man, 67.9% success rate versus press. Those are solid numbers. And the routes that he runs really well are the in-breakers. Dig routes, 83% success rate. Slant routes, just under 81% success rate. Those are pretty key routes in this offense for sure. And he's good with the ball in his hands as well. So high effort, catches everything, plays with good attitude, you know, blocks well, yards after catch. It does sound like the type of receiver that they need in the room to be kind of that the glue guy there, but like even maybe better than that. So I expect Stribling to open the year as the wide receiver three at worst. And I think he can play a little bit off ball and as a slot, and also be someone who, you know, can take some boundary receiver reps based on the man press scores. So yeah, Stribling is a guy that like I'm definitely monitoring the rest of the summer.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what is it. It's like the confluence of Niner fans who want to justify the pick. It's so weird. Like there's like a very large portion of Niner fans that don't want to believe that a big board exists. One, and two, that the Niners have not reached to get these guys. I don't understand when the history of third round picks for the San Francisco 49ers has just been absolutely abysmal. I mean, absolutely horrific. I mean, they have not been able to turn not just starters, but like guys who can even play in the league. Third round picks, just consistently guys who cannot play in the league. I don't know what it is. I think it's the confluence of San Francisco 49er fans who don't want to admit that their team has not drafted well over the past 5, 6, 10 years. And also the confluence of Ole Miss fans who want to say that their guy, Stribling, is not a reach. That Stribling is that guy. So I don't know what it is, man. But the interest in DeJuan Stribling is crazy high at all times, and it's nothing that Stripling has done. You know, Stripling said nothing. Yeah. I don't even know what DeJuan Stripling sounds like. You know what I'm
saying? Good point. Like, I actually don't know if I've listened to an interview with him either. I should check it out.
I have. You know,
but yeah, I think there's a little bit of all what you're saying there too, and that like admittedly he did kind of come out of nowhere, right? Because. He wasn't a guy that was talked about as a day true draft pick. I got to him late in the process. He was one of the final players I charted. And then I had heard people say like, oh no, yeah, he's going to go on day two, which as I said to you at the time, that to me meant like, oh, this is a coach. This is the coaches got involved late in the process and the coaches really liked this player, which is exactly what everyone has said. And like, yeah, again, every time a reporter comes out and says, oh no, this team had him really high, you know, I'm like, well, I know which coaches that reporter talks to. So yeah, I'm aware of where this is coming from. And I think that like just the public caught up to the Stribling hype late because the Stribling hype was late. So that's part of like the whole surprise element of it. And again, a lot of these social media managers are just trying to cash, you know, they're trying to hit their engagement goals for the week.
All right, there you go. Perfect. Meanwhile, in Kansas City, Cyrus Allen is getting first team reps. Andy Reid, this was from, who is it from? It's from Charles Goldman, who covers the Kansas City Chiefs. Charles Goldman, the conference managing editor of A to Z Sports NFL. So there you go, formerly of the Chiefs Wire. Somebody who's locked in on the Chiefs here says, Andy Reid on Chiefs wide receiver Cyrus Allen's work with the first team offense, quote, I think Pat's got some trust there. So again, there's a lot of opportunity, Matt, for anyone, any receiver in Kansas City to step forward because the depth chart is extremely light. But here's Cyrus Allen getting some first team reps. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, listen, there's a lot of opportunity for a receiver of Cyrus Allen's archetype and skill set, my brother, because the Kansas City Chiefs wide receivers, what do they struggle with? Beating man coverage.
Can't do it. Yep.
Can't do it. Not a thing that they do. Xavier Worthy, even if we're going to give him a pass for last season because of the injuries, you know, never been the best man coverage receiver in the NFL. No. Obviously, that's Rashee Rice's weakness as well. Good zone beater, but not the best man coverage receiver. Cyrus Allen could beat some man coverage. 75% success rate versus man coverage in his charting profile, which is in the rookie roundup. I've been saying, you know, and I wrote this in the Dynasty rankings. I've been saying it on the shows. Like, if you get two beers in me, I would tell you that Cyrus Allen is the best man coverage receiver on the Chiefs. I think yesterday officially I set the beer count to zero. We're just going to say it, okay? It's why he's getting first team reps as a fifth round pick because I think they're intrigued by the skill set there. So, look, it's July 29th. It's one report about first team reps, but I just want to file this away because I think Cyrus Allen is a talented player. Again, another player that I had ranked as a day two player. He went later than I had him ranked. So, you know, I like Cyrus Allen. I am a Cyrus Allen fan. Now, obviously, again, it's a fifth round pick, so I don't want to get too carried away, but I want to just file this away, probably because, James, when I updated my dynasty rankings last, which was a couple of weeks ago, I noticed that the player that I was highest than the market on, the new dynasty rankings tool on the site from this offseason, shows you my rankings relative to like market sources out there. The player I am most ahead of the market on is indeed Cyrus Allen. A sub 6 foot, 180 yeah. pound day three rookie. Has Matt Harmon fallen for it again? Yeah, okay. Maybe, but I want to just file this one away.
5'11, 180, ran a relatively slow 4.49 40.
Oh, how dare great, you!
Great separator, though. Good route runner. These are all the guys. This is the guy.
This is the guy.
This is the Matt Harmon. This is the Matt Harmon guy.
The Matt Harmon fell for it again award.
Oh, man.
Speaking of the Matt Harmon fell for it again award, you know what's another bummer? Jalen Knoll, who is definitely a Matt Harmon fell for it again candidate. He's starting off the training camp on the NFI list. So that's a bummer. He might actually miss like a week or more with a finger injury, I believe. Nick Caserio said it was a finger injury. No idea what that's about. Meanwhile, though, Tank Dell not on the PUP list to start training camp. So that Texans wide receiver room was already going to be interesting, and now it's kind of more interesting. So yeah, as one guy falls to the injury curse in Matt Harmon fell for it again Hall of Fame, one guy rises here in Cyrus Allen.
Hey, where did he go? Was he a fifth round pick or fourth round? Fifth round pick by Kansas City this past draft cycle. And again, when you take a look at the depth chart, guys, it's not the best. Rashee Rice, their best wide receiver, just finished rehab in jail. So that's always interesting.
Nope, not great.
Xavier Worthy cannot stay on the football field and has not been a consistent separator. Tyquan Thornton, they've got listed as the wide receiver 3, I guess. Maybe, I don't know. Jalen Royals is there out of what, Utah State, right? Like, again, there was some Jalen Royals. I don't know. I kind of sort of like Jalen Royals. I liked him. I know he's one of these one side of the field guys, right?
Yes, and I think I wrote about him as a prospect, honestly, funny enough, compared him to like a Rashee Rice type. I think that was one of J.J. Zacharyson's comparisons for him as a like from a statistical model perspective as well. And I think they are very similar, like build and 10-yard split, exactly the same, and Rashee Rice. So I kind of think Royals is more of like Rashee Rice insurance. Because I don't think he has the skills to be like, he's another guy that you need to roll cater to. And that's like what I'm obsessed with this Chiefs receiver room, is they need somebody who they can just ask to line up and win and get open. And they haven't had that guy like,
in
you know,
2 years. Maybe
2 years,
3 years, 4 years. I don't know.
It's been a minute. A minute. I mean, it's been since what, Tyreek Hill? And
yeah.
Tyreek Hill's, by the way, his career is probably over at this point based on that injury and what he said recently. So, you know, I think for this whole era, it's been a lot of guys. Like I was obviously hoping, if talking about Matt Harmon fell for it again, I was hoping Sky Moore was going to be that guy, and he never developed into that player in the NFL. Didn't show that he could separate against man coverage and was more of like a slot player than anything else, and obviously just was not as good in the slot as Rashee Rice, and he just didn't become the player he should have been. Maybe Cyrus Allen won't either, but dude, I mean, right now, like, we're desperate for options here, like, and I do think 75% success rate versus man for Cyrus Allen, it's a skill set they don't have right now.
And they need it, and they've, like you said, they've needed it for a while now. We got a question from Twitter in regards to Tyler Hernley. Tyler Hernley asked us a question. DK Metcalf is an X receiver and should stay mainly there. I understand that. However, with Pittsburgh moving on from Arthur Smith, could we see a shift in his usage similar, although not as dramatic, as to what happened with Drake London after he left ATL? And DK Metcalf, there are reports that DK Metcalf is moving around the formation here. So I'm intrigued. What are your thoughts here on DK? Again, no Arthur Smith. You've got Mike McCarthy there. DK, you know, again, some early reports that he is moving around as well. I don't know. What are your thoughts here?
I don't want to totally dismiss it, right? Because, you know, obviously Arthur Smith, you're going to play, you know, mostly X receiver. You're going to play mostly kind of like a static offense. And because they play so much heavy personnel, that's going to make your ability to move around even less so than you would in another offense. Last season, among wide receivers with 200 or more routes, DK Metcalf had the 17th highest percentage of his snaps come out wide, 84.5%. That was in the zone of, like, you know, we talked about Tetero McMillan on the last episode. Tetero McMillan was 84.8%. Cortland Sutton, Keon Coleman, DK Metcalf, Adonai Mitchell, you know, guys who are just like X only players for the most part. I'm of two minds with this. One, I do think obviously if they play more 11 personnel, there's a chance DK moves around more than that. Yeah. And maybe gets into like Mike Evans, JSN area in terms of outside receivers, which those guys were like 23rd and 25th highest outside receiver rate. The only issue I would have there is that I think he's the only guy on the roster that can play X receiver. Michael Pittman can maybe do it a little bit. He can certainly play on ball. I think Jeremy Bernard can probably play on ball a little bit. But still, if we're talking about like winning down the field as a vertical press man beater,
yeah,
you know, DK's the guy that the only guy on the roster that can do that. So he will probably move around more because you can't really move around less than what he did last year. Like I said, 17th highest, and some of the guys ahead of that in terms of outside receiver, it's like, again, super X only players or in very static offenses. But that's the other part of this too. The reason that the Drake London comparison kind of dies in after just saying like, okay, both guys played under Arthur Smith.
Yeah.
Is that like Drake London, I just think one has a different skill set than DK Metcalf. Like I don't really think they're similar players. And like London did profile as a guy that could play as a big slot and everything. DK doesn't really profile like that. And then the other part of this too is, you know, we're talking about like a Rams based offense under Zach Robinson the last couple of years in Atlanta. And I mean, I don't think that Mike McCarthy's going to run a pretty static 11 personnel offense, because that's what he does. And that's what Aaron Rodgers wants to do as well.
Yeah, this was from Mike McCarthy speaking with the media yesterday. Mike McCarthy says they are going to move DK Metcalf around the formation more this year. I would be curious to see if they have him in motion too, you know?
Yeah.
Get that big body moving and away from defenders, and just kind of give him some more catered looks, some more design touches, and just get him, again, just rolling, man. Get that big body rolling and just see what happens there. So, I don't know. I do think that Michael Pittman can play a decent amount as an X. And you know what? You know what else too, Matt? I would not put it past Mike McCarthy to kind of sort of like even have like running backs just be sacrificial X guys and just running deeper routes. And again, just to steal some snaps here and there. I'm not saying, you know, 10% or anything crazy, but even if it's something as little as 5%, where you're just, again, we're just stealing snaps here and there for DK Metcalf to kind of sort of move around. I don't know. Like I said, I wouldn't put it past Mike McCarthy to do that either. You know what I mean?
Michael Pittman last year, 65% snaps outside in reception perception, 58.8% snaps off the ball. So not pure Z receiver stuff. Like, yeah. I'm with you that he can play some X receiver a little bit. Metcalf, though, and he's somebody I haven't charted yet. He's going to be up on the docket here pretty soon. But he's pretty much all, like, from 2020 to 2024 with the Seahawks, always above 75% on the line of scrimmage rate.
Yeah,
so
right.
I think that, listen, if we can get that down to, you know, close to 70%, if Michael Pittman's able to take some, and again, I think Jeremy Bernard probably should end up being the third receiver on this team over Roman Wilson. I do think there's a chance that, like, yeah, you can move DK around more. So I don't want to totally dismiss the idea of it, but I just think that if tactically, like, DK is the best vertical X receiver on the team. And I think he just brings the offense alive a little bit more in that way.
I will say this, when you look at his 2024 profile, the one route that does look really good there is the slant route, which almost 84%. If he's going to run, you know, in the slot, it will be one of those kind of sort of, you know, slant heavy, I would imagine slant heavy routes for DK Metcalf. The one thing that you highlighted in your profile of him in 2024 was that, man, he just could not slow down, you know? 47% success rate on curl routes, 66% success rate on comebacks. That is atrocious. And nearly 13% route participation on the curl. To post a sub 50% success rate on the curl, Matt, I don't see that often, man. Like, that is, again, I don't have the historical database in front of me here, but that's got to be one of the lower scores that you will ever find, especially for a high profile player like DK Metcalf, man.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. And I think that was, at times he was a little bit better about that, but yeah, 2024 was just a rough season for him. So I am interested to go into the 2025 tape with him and check out what he did in Pittsburgh, obviously, and kind of compare that role. I don't know, man. It's tough to get too jacked up about this Steelers offense right now.
No.
Did you see Aaron Rodgers said today about well, you know, we really got to get under center more on early downs and stuff like that. I'm like, brother,
wait, what?
Yeah, who?
Aaron Rodgers said
we're this? All trying to find the guy who did this.
Aaron Rodgers said this, dude. What? Okay, that's interesting. Okay, no. Although, again, you're saying it's hard to get excited about the Steelers offense, and then we also talk about social media engagement, bro. Like, our Pittsburgh Steelers breakdown of their three receiver set is crazy viral on Instagram. It's one of our engaged with posts.
Weird.
It's very weird. Pittsburgh fans are excited about it, though. And I think they like our breakdown of how this is going to be one of the biggest, most physical wide receiver rooms in the NFL between DK Metcalf, Michael Pittman, and Jeremy Bernard. And quite honestly, if these guys, let me just put it to you this way. Like, this goes beyond the route running and all that kind of stuff. If these guys are three players who can win in contested catch. And again, that's yet to be seen. I do think Michael Pittman can do it. I think DK Metcalf can do it, but it's up and down, right? So, and Jeremy Bernard as well. But if these guys can be contested catch guys, I think that at this point in Aaron Rodgers' career, I think those are the kind of players that I think he will do okay with. So having that physicality, being able to box out defenders and create a large wingspan and a little bit of a larger target area for Rodgers, I think that's good, you know? Just have him just get that ball out and just be able to trust his receivers, I think will be huge.
You are kind of testing my brain here a little bit, because one of the things that I said about the Panthers receiver room is that I think they are one of the teams that have a chance to go against the trend and really, as everybody's obsessed with heavy personnel and everything, they can really spread things out with big physical receivers who can block and still keep the run game activated. They can get condensed. They can get wide. I mean, Steelers.
That's it.
Same thing. So these are, I know nobody's, again, maybe I should just stop trying to play into the narrative here about the Steelers are cooked or whatever. I do find it a little hard to get excited about the Aaron Rodgers experience in the year 2026, but at least tactically what they're going to do, I think they are another team that has a chance to go against the trend here.
Oh, it's Mike McCarthy, dude.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They're playing 11 personnel. Yeah. I just want, you mentioned the slants for DK Metcalf, the slants for Michael Pittman, the quick outs. I mean, slant flats, baby. We can get this activated. We get a Mike McCarthy, Aaron Rodgers offense activated here with these guys.
That's what I mean. You know, and then DK, every now and again, a little play action, deep shot down the sideline. Come on, man. I'm just saying, the way the roster is constructed, it's not bad. For Aaron Rodgers, I think I said something similar last year too, and I was, not right. but we'll see.
Well, they won the division, right? I mean, you were actually right.
There you go.
They did the same Steelers thing as ever and get annihilated in the first round of the playoffs, which
absolutely destroyed.
We'll see.
See how that happens. Early connection. Well, first of all, this is not on the rundown at all. But dude, did you? Speaking of guys getting annihilated in the playoffs, did you see CJ Stroud showing up to camp, dude?
I did.
What? What happened to his aura, dude? Like, he lost all of his aura points, dude. Like, what happened? He looked so downtrodden. I mean, the fact that he was in, like, you know, like mud, like mud-colored clothes, and like, it just was like, what, dude? He looks so. He had cut the dreads. He's going in there with like, kind of like with a duck walk. Like, I don't know how early in the morning it was, but maybe it was too early. But like, he had the duck feet going. You know, it just,
maybe
the,
he's the eaten was, lettuce sometime recently. I don't know. That's what I
what
thought.
What is happening? You know, can't what be, happened with lettuce CJ Stroud?
We got a lettuce issue in the country right now. So maybe he had, you know, a health situation. Just had to get in there and get take care of his business. Wasn't a great video, but I'm kind of finding myself to be a Stroud apologist right now, so I don't want to go too hard on CJ for that one.
Okay. I'm talking about, though.
Yes.
The aura was gone, dude.
Yes, it was not. No, it was not an aura-filled video.
No.
But you know what? Maybe he just wasn't right. I don't know, dude. It wasn't great.
It wasn't great.
That video, by the way, I saw a Texans reporter point this out, has early this morning, I haven't checked again, 6.5 million views.
Beautiful.
On Twitter. I mean, it Beautiful. Is just, people were fired up about that one. But dude, I feel for CJ. Not good.
Why did he cut his hair? Don't cut your hair, bro.
You know, sometimes you got to cut your hair. Okay. Sometimes you got to cut your hair to make a big life. Like when it's a big life change, you know, you go through a breakup, you move to a new city. Now, I think CJ Stroud is trying to break up with the demons of his past from this poor play, in the playoffs. So he's trying to like remake himself.
On my radio show last night, I compared it to Britney Spears shaving her head after a mental breakdown. I was like, this is not what I want to see. I don't want to see this.
You know what the tough part about it too? I honestly, it's just, it really, the walk, sure, the hair, but to me it was the clothes.
Yes. You know, that's what I'm saying.
And I don't get it. I actually don't get this trend overall where the kids, I sound like an old man here. Okay. The kids are like, you know, they're going so, like sometimes if you're a big guy, and like, you know, you can wear the boxy clothes and like it hangs well.
Okay.
But like sometimes when I see the skinny dudes and like the boxy shirts, I don't get it. I don't really get this trend that the youths are going for, especially CJ. CJ's been in the gym. I've seen those pictures where he's looking like he's.
Oh, he looks ripped.
He looks ripped. Get that boxy shirt out of here. And the boxy clothes and like, let's show off the guns, bro, because I've seen those gym pictures and he's been looking good. All right. So like that,
crazy.
I am not the person to give anyone, you know, aura counseling. I am not. However, okay. I think we just got to get rid of the boxy shirt. And I think we could have done better there,
man. I don't know what's going on, dude. I mean, he just shows up, white t-shirt, basketball shorts, backpack.
He got the Jalen Knoll notification and was so sad.
He was bummed.
Yeah, he was bummed.
Yeah, okay. I gotcha. The early connection between Drake May and A.J. Brown reportedly is not great. This was from the Boston Herald, who says the contrast downfield has been particularly striking between May's passes for A.J. Brown and those intended for Kayshon Boutte, who has been a highlight machine. No one has had a better early portion of the training camp than Kayshon Boutte. I can't go past five posts without seeing somebody talking about how good Kayshon Boutte looks. But the connection between Drake May and A.J. Brown is reportedly not good. Also in this report, and this is really where I want to sort of pick your brain here, Matt, was that Pop Douglas is being utilized a lot more, and sometimes in, you know, two receiver sets here. So again, according to the Boston Herald, Douglas is not always in the slot. And Pop Douglas, interestingly, this is from the report, interestingly, the offense has also featured every possible pairing from the trio of A.J. Brown, Romeo Doubs, and Demario Douglas. meaning Douglas is not always in the slot. I found that note to be really interesting. And the Boston Herald reporting that Pop Douglas is the most consistently available of those three. So a lot more Pop Douglas, which, again, shocking because, golly, man, he was rarely used last year. I thought he had been completely frozen out of the offense. I thought he might be a guy that gets no playing time at all in 2026. And all of a sudden, we're seeing him pop up a lot more, pun fully intended.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing to note about Pop Douglas is you're right that he was pretty buried last year, but they did use him in specific ways, and that was most notably against man coverage. Despite the fact that he was a part-time player last year, he averaged 3.2 yards per route run against man coverage, which was the sixth most behind George Pickens and Nico Collins among receivers who ran 200-plus routes last year. Like, they weaponized him, and I know I did a Diggs breakdown at one point. I noted that Douglas was kind of used on these big outbreaking routes against man coverage. And I think that he can obviously, like, he's always been an odd player. And I think this is why he's never fully like become a full-time slot receiver, is because he's been a better man coverage receiver than a zone coverage receiver in his reception perception charting. But they found a way to weaponize that. And I think that could lead them to do that a little bit more this year. But my guess is still that their top three receivers are A.J. Brown, Kayshon Boutte, and Romeo Doubs. And I have found it interesting to read some. I feel like I've been getting mixed reports about the receiver alignment situation.
Okay.
In that, like, and maybe, I guess, if I like who's lining up at what position most often, and obviously this is going to be tough, but it was something that we wanted to track. We talked about A.J. Brown's alignment previously. But I think we have a kind of just overall situation where I would guess that, like, they should just keep Kayshon Boutte. The more I thought about the I think they should just keep him. Like, he was a trade candidate for a while, but, like,
oh, yeah.
It seems as if Kyle Williams is not, like, fully earned trust yet and is still kind of buried on the depth chart. They're talking about, like, I saw Matt Collins had a quote about they've talked like moving to tight end or something.
Oh boy.
Okay. I mean, I like just feels as if that their top four guys are going to be Brown Boutte, Douglas, and Doubs. And I think that that's like, they should keep Kayshon Boutte in that way because he was a guy that was pretty much a pure X receiver and kind of a sacrificial X for them last year.
Yep.
But I think based on his prospect profile, and I wrote about this in the rookie roundup when he came into the league, I thought he'd be more of like a slot Z receiver. So I'm curious to see him move into that role and see if he can do a little bit more. And then Doubs, you know, they've talked about moving him around the formation. I think A.J. Brown needs to kind of be moved around the formation, but that's three guys. If it's A.J. Brown, Kayshon Boutte, and Romeo Doubs that all played primary X receiver last year, but I think could benefit from and could do a little bit more from a move around perspective. So if I'm them, I'm keeping Kayshon Boutte and I'm kind of just experimenting with that three receiver set and sprinkling in DeMario Douglas as like a big man coverage answer at times, but I would be kind of surprised if his route percentage rises much higher. I mentioned the yards per route run numbers there. He was still, he just was, he, when he was on the field, he was a purposeful target for them. He just was not on the field very often at all. So yeah, he was very efficient overall, but he only played on 25.9% of the snaps last year.
Wow. Yeah. And like I said, there was just different times where Josh McDaniels just forgot that he existed, you know? So, yeah. But the reason I bring up Pop Douglas is I do wonder, and this is never usually a one-for-one case, but when you're looking for a Stephon Diggs replacement, and Diggs was extremely valuable to the passing game last year, and he was a player that played just about 50-50 inside-outside. You talk about some of the man coverage, beating ability from Pop Douglas, and he's primarily been used in the slot, but he seems to me like profiles as a player that could be a guy that fills that Stephon Diggs role, playing a 50-50 inside-outside role. Meanwhile, I think Kayshon Boutte, to me, looks mostly like an outside receiver splitting between X and Z. I know you mentioned some slot work with him there, but just on this team, I wonder if there's even slot work available for Kayshon Booty. So, again, I know it's never a one-for-one, but from a skill set perspective, I do wonder if Pop Douglas, Demario Douglas, is somebody that could fill that Stephon Diggs role.
Yeah, 52.3% snaps in the slot last year for Steph Diggs. Yeah, I think this is a really interesting receiver room to track, you know, because I think they've got a three receiver set that I think makes sense and three guys who played X receiver last year. So this is going to be really fascinating. But I know I mentioned about A.J. Brown when we talked about his rate of snaps off the ball in his final year with Mike Vrabel in Tennessee. The offensive coordinator of that team was Todd Downing at the time. Todd Downing is the current receiver coach for the New England Patriots. So I do hope that we see A.J. Brown more. Again, it would be hard to be any less than it was last season because A.J. Brown took a massive amount of snaps on the ball. I mean, 72% is not the most in the world, but I would like to see that even lower this year.
Yeah. Okay, meanwhile, the Drake London profile is on the website right now. He continues, in my opinion, to be an underrated route runner. Whenever I hear about Drake London and analysis of Drake London, it always starts with his size. Like, he's a big guy and can just jump balls, and he plays like a basketball player. I've heard that a million times, right? And just outrageous success rates in the intermediate area. 83% success rate or higher on the dig, out, curl, and comeback. Again, these are routes that this is not just a big man routes, you know. This isn't like, oh, just go out there and just play basketball out there. No, you've got to put your foot in the dirt and go, baby. You've got to be able to decelerate and just come down on that rock, right? Like, so I don't know, man. Like, again, I think that Drake London continues to be a very underrated route runner, and your charting certainly shows that as well.
Man, I love Drake London. I would posit that he might be, I'm not saying, you know, he's like the best, but he might be my favorite receiver in the league right now. Because one, he does disprove kind of the, hey, big receiver, contest the catch guy, can't separate. I mean, it is crazy. The analysis of Drake London coming into the NFL draft is like, yeah, he's a big guy, but he can't separate. That was just like, I remember being mystified by that. After like seeing the sentiment and then going and charting him, I was like, this guy gets open all over the field. What are we talking about? Even if he's not the fastest player in the world. And he's still like, yeah, he's not the fastest player in the world. He's not necessarily going to, you know, blow by anybody on the outside, but he can make plays downfield because he is so good in the contested catch area. But yeah, he's continued to get better every single season. 75.7% success rate versus man coverage, 83.8% success rate versus zone coverage, both career best numbers, 88th percentile against zone, 83rd percentile against man. And the other reason I think I really love Drake London's game is that I think he just is, this is like the archetype of receiver you want to be like unless you land on Jamar Chase or Justin Jefferson, which is really hard to do. This is like the archetype of what you want as a number one in the NFL right now, which is a guy that can credibly play X receiver. In his first two seasons, he was an X receiver in Arthur Smith's offense, as we were talking about earlier. He was outside and on the line of scrimmage on over 80% of his snaps, 86% outside in year one, 85% snaps on the line of scrimmage, year two, 78% outside, 82.4% on the line of scrimmage. But he's so good and so fluid, and he's such an excellent player working against zone coverage. It's like, you need to get this guy on the move. You need to get this guy in the slot. And that's happened each of the last 2 years, but he's not necessarily a big slot receiver. He's like a big movement Z receiver. His rate of snaps in the slot in the last two seasons, 38.9% sampled snaps in the slot in 24, 33.1% this past year. So a little bit more outside work this past year. Couple of things to talk about as to why that was true. But his rate of snaps off the ball went 15 and 17.6% in his first 2 years, up to 52.7% and 53.3% the last 2 years. And that's really how they've been able to weaponize him as a pre-snap motion offense. Obviously, his role is changing this year, I don't know if his role is changing, but his offensive, you know, coordinator is changing. Mm-hmm. Zach Robinson out, goes to Tampa Bay. I believe this is the role now Emeka Ibuka is going to play in this offense in Tampa Bay now. And back in Atlanta, it's Kevin Stefanski and Tommy Reese are the two guys there.
Right.
Tanner Engstrand, passing game coordinator.
Oh, is he? I didn't know that. Okay.
We have not talked about the Garrett Wilson profile that is up on the site, but yeah, watching back the Jets offense, this is just a quick side note. We can break this down. It was so frustrating because I'm like, this passing game is really well designed. This run game stinks, but the passing game is well designed, but it doesn't fit the quarterback at all, which is Justin. It was such a bizarro offense. So we'll see what Frank Reich does with that. But yeah, I do think that it will be
real quick. When you say that, I love that you bring that up because I thought the passing game was really good too. The running game, I agree with you. I thought stunk. But here's the thing though. In Atlanta, it's Kevin Stefanski, who is one of the best run designers in the NFL, right? So like, I really like what we're seeing here. Although Bijan is, you know, he's holding out right now. He wants a new contract and deservedly so. He's the best running back, in my opinion, in the NFL. But again, Kevin Stefanski, great run designer, in my opinion, one of the best in the NFL. Maybe not on the level of like Sean McVay or Shanahan, but just he's like, you know, he's right there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then you've got, you know, Engstrand, who's, you know, going to be chipping in on the passing game. Okay, I think that's a good marriage right there. I wonder how this all plays out with Drake London and Bijan Robinson and how all of those ingredients all mix. I think when I look at it just from, you know, 30,000 feet in the sky, I'm like, this could actually be really, really good. I thought Zach Robinson did a pretty good job last year too. So let me just get that out there. You know, mm-hmm. I thought he did a pretty good job. I just think, hey, listen, I don't think it's a step down going from Zach Robinson to the Stefanski brain trust. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You can have some qualms with what Robinson did at times as the Falcons offensive coordinator. I just think he was objectively good for receiver usage, especially getting guys opportunities at multiple positions and out of the slot in particular. I mean, 2024, all four of the Falcons' top pass catchers had a rate of snaps in the slot at 39% or higher on passing downs. It was, you know, Kyle Pitts, Drake London, Ray McLeod, Darnell Mooney. Like those guys got a little bit, and I think that's going to happen in Tampa Bay. But you know, he's got some other things to work on. But yeah, I think the Engstrand point is interesting because you know, sometimes I think, like, you know, when Shane Waldron is the passing game coordinator in Jacksonville, people freak out about that. But like, let me tell you what, Liam Cohen is not ever doing anything other than what Liam Cohen wants to do. I will say, like, for a guy like Kevin Stefanski, he has shown an ability to kind of move between different worlds and, you know, for better or worse, take the input of his staff. I mean, when they were trying to do some of what Deshaun Watson likes to do with the spread stuff in Cleveland, like, he did allow Ken Dorsey coming over from Buffalo to bring in a lot of spread stuff. Then that offense looked very, very different. And Kevin Stefanski's generally been, like, he was in Minnesota forever when he eventually became the offensive coordinator there. And they went through like a ton of different offensive kind of cycles. Like, I think his general philosophy is a little bit like kind of old school North Turner-ish stuff, but he's been pretty flexible. And I think that's why I just think the Engstrand hiring is interesting, because his passing game feels very, no shock, like a Ben Johnson movement style passing game, because he was the pass game coordinator under Ben Johnson in Detroit. So I think Engstrand is a guy I'd like to see get a second chance at some point. Obviously, it just didn't work out in New York. But I say that all because I think what I don't want to see happen is, you know, he becomes like just an X receiver again in, you know, a 12 personnel heavy offense. Because they did go pretty 12 personnel heavy last year, did the Falcons. You know, which I think was good for the offense, but that is part of why he did see some fewer snaps in the slot. But they also kind of had to adjust to what Michael Penix likes. You know, Drake London's curl route percentage went from like 16% to over 21% because Penix likes those routes. But you know, and London's fine on those routes as well, you know, because he's kind of more the straight line stuff is Michael Penix. But London is just so good on the big breakers, you know, 89.5% success rate on posts, 84 on digs, 89.2% success rate on the out route, strong corner route success rate too. Like he's the guy that we want to get in motion and like run those big out breakers from the slot or the big in cuts over the middle of the field. I think like there is a chance that if Tua's the starting quarterback in the first month of the season or however long, and Tua's banged up right now in camp, he's got like he tweaked his back. Michael Penix is not doing team drills yet. They just signed Cooper Rush. Like
Drake London is just one of those like tortured receivers at this point from a quarterback standpoint. But
yeah,
I do think what we've seen out of Tua is kind of what Stefanski would want, which is like a quick trigger quarterback, like get the ball out quick and get it on those breaking routes. You know, not necessarily deep balls down on the boundary, which is not what you want to do with Drake London. I think there's a chance that could work for Drake London to start the year, but I do want to see him remain in kind of a dynamic role where he's mostly a Z receiver.
Yeah, it's the wide receiver depth, I think, is a little bit deeper this year. Not a ton, but a little bit. Jahan Dotson added to the mix. You got Olamide Zaccheaus in the mix, and obviously they spent decent draft capital on Zachariah Branch as well, who should be primarily a special teams guy, but I think they could find some ways to activate his speed, right? So they'll figure that out. So the wide receiver room, Matt, to me, is a little bit deeper than it was last year. And they've got, you know, again, I think they added some quickness. I think they added some athleticism between Branch and Zaccheaus and Dotson. These guys are, you know, guys that could slide into the slot as well. We'll see how much 11 personnel they use in Atlanta. But, man, like I said, man, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued. The quarterback situation has me yeah, shook.
Totally. It does.
Like, I don't think Penix is a good – he's not a good Stefanski quarterback. Tua is a better fit. But, again –
coming at off this point, a brutal year.
Right. At this point, how much can you realistically expect from Tua? I don't know. The quarterback situation does have me shook a bit, but yeah, I think from a talent standpoint, I feel like we say this every year about Atlanta. From a talent standpoint, other than quarterback, they're okay. They're okay. I don't know.
Yeah. They're okay, I think, is where I would go with it.
Yeah.
There's some... They just didn't add a lot this offseason. They didn't have a first round pick. So they traded away for James Pierce, who had legal issues to start the year.
Wow.
To put it kind.
Yeah, very nicely.
That was very nice of me to say it like that.
Yes.
Pretty disturbing situation, honestly. But if you look at just the rest of the roster, they didn't add a lot because they had to shed salary cap space. You know, they had to, they had to sign Tua on the cheap. Like they're a team that's just in the, they're a team that I think is in look ahead mode. Like, that last regime, you know, Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot did not leave them in great shape. They move on from those guys. They bring in Matt Ryan. They bring in Kevin Stefanski, and they're kind of in look ahead mode. Like, I don't think anybody's fooled that they think that I'm sure they want to leave the light on for Penix, and I would too. I mean, he's only in his third year, but he's coming off major injuries, but it's most likely that their future quarterback is not on the roster. The defense was better than expected last year. There are some offensive line concerns, though, too. Getting Jake Matthews getting a little bit older, right tackle. You know, that's a troubling spot right now at this point. They get Taylor.
You don't like Juwan Taylor, bro?
Yeah, dude, they had to sign Juwan Taylor like on the cheap, and that was like, thank God, because their former right tackle retired. It's just like that's been a problem spot for them on the offensive line. I think they're a team that, again, they're in look ahead mode. Let's put it that way. I'd rank them fourth in the division right now for the Atlanta Falcons.
Well, if they're looking for a quarterback, this is going to be, if everything plays out, it's one of the most stacked quarterback classes I think I've ever seen.
Oh, never heard that before.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, it's crazy.
Never heard that before. Next year's quarterback class is better. That's certainly never let us down before, I'll tell you that.
That's also true. And, you know, it's funny. Like, it's deep, and then on top, it just keeps getting deeper because guys keep coming back to school, you know, because of the NIL money. You know, it's like, I don't know. Like, USC bringing back Jaden Maiava. Like, Maiava's good, like, really good football player, man. I thought he could have came out, but decided to come back to school. Shoot, he's a dark horse Heisman candidate. I don't know. We'll see. Anyways, there you go. That's the show. By the way, go read the full profile, Drake London profile, on receptionperception.com. You could find a bunch of content there. We got a bunch of quarterback profiles about to hit the site here as well. So go check it out, receptionperception.com. We appreciate y'all for reading and subscribing and liking the podcast as well. But we got to go. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We'll see you. But remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. Peace.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. Men's National Team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.